One of the areas that I do some workshops on is on stress, on anger, on communication, on fighting fair, problem solving. And I think in many ways they're all related to stress. How do we handle what happens to our lives? And here's a kind of funny series of cartoons on the 24 warning signs of stress. And it's really sort of ridiculous and funny and humorous, but look at what they're really, the signs of stress. Let me just read them quickly. There's lingering anger, the kind that just keeps on growing and growing. Cold sweat, enlarged pupils, trembling, the shakes, the urge to bite self. Aggressive body language, dry mouth, panic attack, hatred, self-hatred, strange new clothes, whether we're seeing them or wearing them, I suppose, too. Odd rashes, twisty eyes, twisty ears, twisty head, and all these crazy cartoons for boxed in feeling, increased appetite. We just constantly stuff ourselves when we're stressed. Weird dreams, very weird dreams. Feelings of
insubstantiality.
That's right, you're just not there. Stiff muscles, overall stiffness, or all of the above. And I think of this very weird dreams when our daughter Anna was in her second year of university, she spent a semester in Paris. And just before she went, she had to go through some physicals for clearance on this program. And they discovered a couple of things, which sent her into the hospital right as soon as she finished her exams in the middle of December. And went through 3 days of tests and discovered that she had a pituitary tumor. Then the endocrinologist went on holiday for a couple of days, and so we saw him again after Christmas then, just before she was to leave. And he suggested there were three things she could do. She chose to do medication. And so she started medication, went off a couple days later, went off to France for 6 months. And she was living as an au pair with a French family. And for a while, was waking up in cold sweat because she'd have these weird, weird dreams. That her body was doing strange, crazy things, and in many of the contortions of these cartoons on this plane, eating other parts of her body. I mean, she'd wake up in a cold sweat and in a panic. And this happened several times. And she finally talked to one friend. And, you know, if you want to believe in spirit-led, this must have been one of them. Because this friend who didn't know what she had gone through, the friend had a family who was located in London, England. And so that friend had already left for England before Anna discovered this and had gone through her test. And she had chosen not to talk to any of her friends about what had happened and what her pituitary tumor. But she chose this one particular girl, Karen, of what was happening. And Karen said, "I have a pituitary tumor also. They just discovered it last summer, and I haven't talked to very... Well, I had a chance to talk with my family and others about it, but I haven't really talked very much." And so they began to talk more about what was happening with the two of them. Anna said her stress level went way down, and she's never had another dream like that again. So some of these things look very crazy, but some of them are things that happen and give us a clue to the fact that something is going on within our body. Here's another kind of cartoon or drawing with the lightheaded, the sweats, the cotton mouth, the fast, shallow breathing, clutching up whatever you got in your hand, the wobbles, freaking out, saying things such as, "I'm freaking out," or "I can't do it," or "I knew I couldn't." And when do we become aware of the kind of stress within our system? There's a little, let me read a couple of descriptions here. We talk about optimum stress level. We're all living within some stress because stress is everywhere. It's within our lives. If we aren't stressed, we're dead. So the alternative then, the preference might be to be somewhat stressed, but find a way to manage that stress. So this little cartoon talks about the optimum stress level is a feeling of alertness and self-confidence. Yeah, I can handle it. We think and respond quickly and effectively. There were some little kids here and there were some glasses around on our stone fireplace and a little kid happened to turn around and elbow knocked it off, somebody would jump for it probably quickly and catch it. Well, there is a sense of stress, and others around here will say, it's going to fall. Nope, they're not going to get it in time, and there will be a sense of what's going to happen, and somebody may correct it. So you respond quickly, effectively. We perform well and have a feeling of enthusiasm and well-being. We're interested and involved in the task which we can carry out in an energetic and easy manner. Kind of, I can do it. It's like the little engine that could. I think I can, I think I can. Yeah, I know I could. I know I can. But what happens when there's a higher level, when there's more things than we can really handle? Well, there might be physical anxiety and mental confusion, and we'll probably all have experienced a number of these at various times, as long as it's not a continuous one. An inability to think effectively, or to remember instructions or training, or to work out problems clearly and objectively. I could do that once, but I can't figure it out right now. At high levels, panic may occur, causing dangerous choices and decisions to be made. Bodily tension may include rapid beating heart, high blood pressure, excessive perspiration, trembling and feeling faint, churning stomach and indigestion, dry mouth and uneven breathing. Coordination may be impaired and reflexes slow down. These are all negative stress responses. Yes.
Can you also have memory loss?
Sure. Not being able to think clearly, and that's, that name can't come up right. I don't quite remember when it happened. Things are sort of muddied and unclear. You can't pinpoint them.
Your guts feel it on turmoil, too. Yeah. It's not in the car, too, but it should be.
Yeah, waviness with his hand that's on the stomach there, yeah. But there's also times when, I don't know whether, we may be overstressed, and that may also bring us to burnout. Burnout is an excessive amount of stress that's just one continuing habit. It's just a lot of it in a long string, and then physically, it just uses up everything that you have. But there's also that lower level of stress, and it may be because we've been completely stressed, we've switched over to the other side. A lack of interest or enthusiasm for the task at hand. It gets done. A feeling of depression, futility, a belief that nothing matters anymore, and that even the simplest job is a monumental chore and a bore. Lack of energy. World looks drab and gray. We find it very hard to summon up the energy to start new jobs or create fresh interests. These are also negative stress responses. How else might we define stress? What might be some of the things that we can learn about stress? Off the board. Okay. Stress is an everyday fact of life. It just is. That you can't avoid it unless you're dead. A couple of things. It's a response or a reaction to a demand, maybe more than you feel you can put out or that you have time, or there's just too many demands. It's any change you must adapt to. There's even some stress coming up to Holden Village. There's stress with holidays, Christmas. There's stress with new relationships, even though it may be an exciting thing. There's always some underlying stress that exists there as well. It may come from environmental or events that happen in our environment. It may come from within the body. It's physical. And emotional, and it also isn't, our thoughts are involved in stress. how we look at things, how we perceive things. And so we might look at this diagram. There's something that happens outside, happens in the environment. A loud noise. You're just ready to fall asleep at night, and you hear... and you have an
idea. You gotta tell the story.
That's of mice. And I thought at first Paul was, you know, sometimes he'll wake up in the middle of the night, can't get back to sleep, and I thought he was sort of scratching the pillow. But I looked and his hands weren't moving. So I got up and got the flashlight from off of his dresser. Came back and here was a mouse just ready to hop on my pillow.
Then she had stress.
Then you had stress.
I did too. I woke up at that point.
He was sound asleep through all of this. I had been reading and I had a second pillow behind my back, and when I went to sleep I put it alongside the bed. So the mouse had a nice ramp to climb up on. And even though I got out and moved just a couple of feet from him, didn't scare the mouse. The flashlight did, and he went zooming down and up, I don't know where. We then set a mouse trap. So, what's our perception? What's our cognition? What do we think about it? What are we seeing? What are we understanding from whatever that event is? Is that a mouse? Or what? Interpretation, self-talk. Well, we've had a fruit item on top of the dresser, so maybe that mouse has felt that there's something there. Self-talk. Well, let's get up and find out what it's going to be. I could have nudged Paul and said, get some of these in here. I had an idea it was a mouse. But sometimes we have some very irrational ideas. Somebody's breaking in. There's a bear at the back door. Now that happened a couple of years ago here. And there's a feedback loop to our whole emotional and our whole physical system. Something happens. I sat up in bed, you know, alert and very wide awake when I heard the noise. So we have some responses, and we have some choices about some of these responses. Some may be very an automatic, I jump up, I reach for a flashlight. It might be a sound that comes out and wakes somebody else up. It might be fear that immobilizes you so you can't move at all. So there's a variety of things that can happen. And we'll look at what's important, though, is what our interpretation is of that environmental event. And that we have some information about it that comes through either our experience or our fears or what we're telling ourselves about it. And then our body responds to it. Hanselia is probably one of the people who's written and done the most with stress. And there's this book in the library, Stress Without Distress. There's another one on stress, unstressed by Sehnert, Sehnert. And a much older one on Kicking Your Stress Habits by Donald Tubessing, that can give us some ideas about stress. But it's not so much, Hanselia says, it's not what happens to you, but what you do with it, what you buy into, your interpretation, your perception of it. I have another friend who talks about stress and refers to it as rectal retinitis. And her definition of rectal retinitis is when the nerve endings are misconnected between the rectum and your eyes, and your outlook is crappy. Everything you look at is crappy, or other words you might choose to use. So in a sense, it's dis-ease. Dis-ease becomes the disease. It's what your mind possesses, your body expresses. How we think becomes something that affects our whole body system. Okay, Now, there's some ways that we can respond to it, and here's Charlie and Linus in a Peanuts cartoon. And, you know, stress is any activity, anything that happens to you, a change, a demand. So here's Linus saying, I don't like to face problems head on. I think the best way to solve problems is to avoid them. This is a distinct philosophy of mine. No problem is so big or so complicated that it can't be run away from. And sometimes that's how we try to respond to stress, to see if we can run away from it. Here's another cartoon, looking at a poster on the board saying, things to do tomorrow. Get up at the crack. Number one, get up at the crack of dawn. Two, stuff up the crack. Three, go back to bed. And, you know, for some things, that might be the best way to resolve. If we want to look at some of the coping skills for dealing with stress, humor is one of them. There are six basic copers for dealing with stress. And finding some kind of humor is one of those coping skills. Can you find some humor side of it? Well, I don't know about the mouse, but I'm sure. This is not necessarily one of the copers, but I think it's an important thing to remember as we deal with stress, and that is that we're okay people. And that a name tag that I think we've gotten as a gift from our Creator when we came into this world is a name tag that says, I am lovable and capable. I think it's indelibly printed on each one of us, whether we know it or not, like it or not, or accept it. And another part of humor on that, I use that as a name tag underneath name tags that I use in my when I do courses. And one time long ago, we did this with a marriage enrichment group, and middle-aged people when we weren't quite middle-aged at that time. And I asked if anybody had any idea of what IALEC stood for. Blank faces. They were not stressed. They were under stress, probably. And finally, there was this one gentleman whose eyes began to twinkle and his mouth began to curl up, and he raised his hand tentatively and he said, I have an idea what it stands for. It stands for, I am Lutheran and cuddly. So think about that. That gets you into some humor, and you've got one other coper for your stress to reduce the stress reduction. I think if we want to look at some of the, let me get my other chance. If we want to look at what are some of the coping skills for stress, we can look at the six copers. Already said that one is humor. Have any idea what some of the others might be? Okay, good. Okay, so that, let's put down exercise. Physical activity that gets you moving, gets more oxygen into your system, whether it's walking or doing some exercise.
Even scrubbing the floor. I heard if you're depressed, you should scrub the floor.
Yeah, it works out some of that. And also when we think in terms of stress, that may be a result of some anger that we're holding in. Thinking about anger and how do we reduce some of that anger and take some time out before we act inappropriately or unhelpfully about it. I remember one woman who had three school-age boys having a lot of anger to deal with, particularly about black, dirty white socks. And finally, one of her ways of dealing with the stress about the socks and dealing with her anger about it was that she set up a pail of soapy water in the laundry tub. And the boys had to put their socks into that soapy water when they took them off at night. And then whenever anyone got angry, a timeout for that anger was to go into that laundry room and scrub those white socks with a brush. She said, we have the whitest socks in the neighborhood, and we don't have a lot of screaming, ranting, and raving, and hitting around here, because they just work it off, scrubbing those socks. So there's a bit of exercise, there's also a bit of humor there. Another idea.
How about the opposite, meditation?
Meditation, okay. That's actually not down, but we could put it down as number 7, and I think that's this list of 6 Coper skills might not have been made by somebody who thinks that meditation is important. The rest of them aren't in any order, actually.
How about
nutrition?
How about what you eat? Good nutrition.
Is that really true? Would affect your stress level?
Oh,
tremendously.
Really?
You explain why you would say tremendous. I agree with you.
I have a lot of food allergies.
Okay.
Diabetic, and food can affect my mood swings and my chest.
Food has a lot of influence on how your body. If I have, if I go overboard on chocolate particularly, I'm a lot more stressed out than if I have a smaller amount. And
further, when you're stressed, the temptation for me and for a lot of people is, well, I grab a cup of coffee and some junk food instead of getting good food.
And that may make you even more hyper.
Right, it makes you more hyper.
Or you go have a bottle or two of beer. Then your perception and your understanding of the whole thing becomes even more skewed, or perhaps causing you to make decisions that are not as helpful as other decisions might be, so they can produce more stress. So good nutrition makes an important point. How about rest? Sometime.
I think she thinks.
Everybody over 30 ought to take a nap every day. Put that in the contract.
You can cut out my health benefits, but give me my 20 minutes of nap time. Okay, we got a couple more. What might be some of the other areas that you find relief other than R-O-L-A-I-D-S? Isn't that the commercial on, or how do you spell relief, relate?
There must be something in which you're relating to somebody and getting mutual affection.
What do you call those people that you like to talk to?
Confidence.
Friends,
okay. Friends,
okay.
That's a good word.
Isn't that what you're sort of getting
at,
friends?
A support group.
Yeah. Somebody that you can feel comfortable with, that they're not going to say, oh, don't feel that way, or you shouldn't be feeling that way, or why didn't you do it?
Which a lot makes of times you can't let off steam in front of your boss, but you can let off steam in front of friends.
And sometimes, if you don't feel that you can do it with your family, mm-hmm. you might lower that emotional level by talking about it with a friend that you have a good amount of trust with, that they're not going to start spreading all sorts of rumors, and you need to be pretty confident about that, or your stress is going to be even higher. Okay.
Working with the stress directly. Maybe you need to change your job. So.
Yeah, that's another possibility. What kinds of changes? And we'll talk about the 3 D's of dealing with stress. Okay.
Prayer.
Prayer would be under meditation, and I think that's, you know, and part of that is buying some time, taking a little time out, perhaps getting some more oxygen in and thinking things through and talking with somebody. Maybe you don't have that person out there that you really trust, but God doesn't tell tales. And you might go in prayer and in meditation that way to share this information, or to clear up your feelings and your thoughts, or get some clarity on your feelings and thoughts. Maybe there's something that you want to do with your hands, and maybe there are sometimes that hobbies is included in one of these stressors. What can you do that may get you into another activity that has some enjoyment or some positive end result. Weaving, some stitchery, doodling, drawing. It may be going out to run or bicycling or playing a game of card games.
Gardening.
Digging into the earth. Having some fun. There's a lot more that we can put onto this list of Copers that would be very helpful too. Any more that we want to add that you can think of?
I had a kind of tangential comment about several times it's come up breathing, the importance of getting oxygen.
Yes.
One of the things that happens to people who perform often is before they go on stage, they will be yawning. And other people will say, oh, isn't that funny? Because you have to relax before you go on stage. And what it is there is a shallow breathing that the body is crying for oxygen. And they will yawn in an attempt to get the oxygen.
Yes, very true. How do we get more oxygen in? Partly that helps us to be better thinkers. Breathing. And most often we're breathing, I think of, I want to make my middle look smaller, so I'll take a deep breath. But that's not the type that gets us more oxygen in. That sometimes you need, when you take a deep breath, and let's put our feet on the floor and give it a try. That when you take a deep breath, you actually want to feel your stomach expand, because part of our lungs go farther down and you want them to fill up completely. If you only constrict, it's like a balloon that you're only filling the top part of and you never get down to fill the bottom part. So take a deep breath through your nose. See if your middle comes out. Now maybe you have to loosen a belt there if you really want to do it. Some of these things, if you're in a lot of traffic in the car, you may want to just loosen that buckle in your top button on your pants if you got a pair of pants on, or do some breathing while you're waiting at a stoplight or while you're waiting in a traffic jam. Much more helpful than saying, well, I don't think, and just gnawing and chewing your fingernails and cussing at them and clenching your fist and doing all sorts of things. It doesn't move you one inch closer to your goal. But to take that deep breath and to relax, breathing is very important.
I read recently something by Andrew Weil, a medical doctor, who said that we think of breathing as first we breathe in and then we breathe out. And he recommended trying reversing that and breathe out first, because he said the muscles of exhalation are stronger. You can get totally empty and then you fill up automatically. And so he suggested a reverse rhythm. So
interesting. Interesting approach to it. Either way, that breathing activity is an important activity. Another one that I find very helpful, if I've had a very stressful day and there are a number of years where I taught classes three nights, sometimes four nights a week, and I get back home about 11 o'clock, and Paul will be all ready to go to bed because he'd had his evening at home to relax, and I'm still all keyed up from whatever happened, and I have to sit and read the paper, and sometimes I still get to bed and I wouldn't be able to fall asleep very quickly. And I discovered that if I did some deep muscle relaxation, which you can do almost anywhere without it being too noticeable, and that we might try too, and that's simply tightening various body sections of your body together, and maybe starting from your toes and going all the way up to your face or up to the tip of your hands, and then back again down, and then the whole body, everything all tight. That's going to be a little bit more noticeable, but even doing the separate body parts is very helpful. I remember doing a stress program at a community center one time, and there was just a small group of about six women. And we were lying on the floor, and I had us do the tensing and relaxing muscles first, and then go into some deep breathing. And all of a sudden, when we were ready to do some discussion about it, we realized that there was still one person breathing very deeply, very comfortably, and sound asleep. We were successful. It worked. And we let her rest for a little while and talk quietly until she finally woke up, and she was embarrassed and said, no, this just meant that we were successful. You were able to completely relax. But let's try this. Start with tensing your toes, and I'll describe the parts, I'll go through the whole process with you. And if you want to, just sort of sit up right now at this point with your hands in your lap, or hands maybe even hanging alongside, just sort of let them flow back and forth. And if your chairs are too close, like move that next one just a little bit over so you've got a little space to move your hands. And just let them flow, move freely. And I will count, and I'll say, let's tense our toes and our ankles, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then slowly relax. And relax, don't go, bounce, but slowly relax. If you're doing this on the floor, if you're lying down on the floor, when you finish, you feel that you're going, sinking 6 inches into the floor, actually, when you sort of finish. So let's start by taking several deep breaths. Make sure that you might breathe out first and then fill in all the space that you've just emptied. Can you do your breathing to a count of 4 as you fill in and a count of 4 as you empty out? Let's empty out. 3, 4, fill in. 2, 3, 4, exhale. 1, 2, 3, 4. Inhale. 1, 2, 3, 4. Exhale. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, now continue breathing. Don't want you to stop. And tighten your toes and your ankles. Just curl them up into a tight ball and tighten them as much as you can and hold them for the count of 5. 2, 3, 4, 5. Relax. 2, 3, 4, 5. Tighten your thighs and your the calves of your legs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Relax. 2, 3, 4, 5. Deep breath. Exhale. Tighten your buttocks and your stomach muscles. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Relax. 2, 3, 4, 5. Deep breath. Take a deep breath and hold, because I want you to tighten your chest muscles now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Relax. Exhale. 2, 3, 4, 5. Take a deep breath. Tighten your fingers and your wrist in a tight ball. 2, 3, 4, 5. Relax. 2, 3, 4, 5. Deep breath. Tighten your arms and your shoulders. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Relax. 2, 3, 4, 5. Deep breath. Tighten all your facial muscles. You'll frown, but everybody's eyes are closed, so they won't be watching. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Relax. 2, 3, 4, 5. Deep breath. Tighten all the muscles in your body from your toes to your fingertips to your eyebrows. Everything. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Relax. 2, 3, 4. Deep breath. shake your hands freely in that space that you've got by your chair. Okay, open your eyes and slowly come back to some less stress, I hope. I'm not going to go through going back again from your head and your fingertips and your head all the way down to your toes, because I think we might fall asleep before the end of the session. Got a little bit more to do. There are choices that you can make to reduce some of the stress. So we might have, we'll put a number 9 down there, and we'll put muscle. And relax. Have I got muscle strength?
Yes.
Okay. And then we want to look at the 3 D's that might also be coping skills. And one of them would be to delegate. We need to look at our time. Are we setting our goals and our lists of things to do, making them so packed that it's impossible, that we're setting ourselves up for extra stress because there's more that we can fit into that time? I like the idea of it doesn't work for me. I still make my lists and try to cross out what I still have to do in my list. Sometimes last weeks and weeks, I just keep adding on to them. But I like the idea of the woman who said she doesn't make any lists at the beginning of the day. She makes a list at the end of the day of all the things she's accomplished, and then she can go through and cross out every one of them and feel, look at what I've all accomplished today. And that may be a very positive way of looking at it. But we do have a variety of responsibilities. What of those responsibilities can we delegate? What can we get others to do? In families where there are children around that are very stressful situations, I think children are inbred stress producers because you have additional responsibilities. They're joys, but they can also be stress producers. I think the sooner that we begin to get them involved in the various kinds of things that need to be done within the home to delegate responsibilities, that takes away some part of your stress. I have to do all of this, all myself. And look at them sitting in front of the television and doing nothing, not even their homework. And your stress level goes up even higher. How do we get them involved? Making the meals. They're going to eat them. Why not make them? Cleaning up afterwards, cleaning, taking responsibilities with other things. Either house cleaning, something. What at one time in our life, we had a student living with us. We were living just off the Syracuse University campus. And for most of our lives, when our kids were around, we had students living with us who gave us some built-in babysitters, first of all, but we gave them inexpensive caring households for them to live in. We put up a board, and we had the names up above of everybody who lived in, well, the names down the side of who lived in the house. There was Dad, there's Mom, there's Charlie, there was Anna, there was Sarah. Charlie was a student who lived with us. And then there was Monday through Saturday. We didn't really put a list up for Sunday. Sunday Sabbath, I guess we didn't do any special jobs, and everybody sort of, by then, everybody participated in what needed to be done. But there were jobs that somebody had to do throughout. I mean, there were meals and the cleanup that were definite. But there were also the things that had to be done within our house, because we had a lot of students that came in the house. Paul was chaplain, Lutheran chaplain at Syracuse University at the time. So students met in our house a lot. I'd even sometimes have a classmate in the house. We had 4-H'ers that met in the house. So there was some little part of a job, one room that was to be vacuumed each day, rather than vacuum the whole house and you're sweating and you're upset because it's taking you 2 hours to do it. It was a large house. Paul made little cards, and on Sunday we would choose what would be our jobs for the week and when, according to whatever the schedule was. And when you did the job, you unpinned it and put it back in this little pocket. And there would also be a couple of, you know, in the middle of July there would be a little card that might be pinned up to somebody saying, shovel snow. It meant you had a day off. Or mow the grass in January. when it's under 2 feet of snow. We tried to delegate responsibility so that it was distributed more evenly among the people in the household. Maybe you ought to just plain delete it. Don't do it. Learn to say no. Our address was 100 Berkeley Drive when we lived in Syracuse. And 3 or 4 times a year, I would get a call from some charitable organization asking if I would canvass X number of streets. It was the beginning of our street, and they looked up and see who'd begin. And at first I would say, yeah, I would do it, and I hate it. And I would procrastinate. Sometimes I'd get the girls to do it, and sometimes they'd go with me, and sometimes I just didn't do it at all. I finally learned to delete and to say no, and I said, you know, even though it was an organization that I felt very strongly about, I was able to say very honestly, you'll be much better off if you get somebody else to do it because they'll end up doing it. And I find that knocking on doors is one of the world's worst jobs for me. I'll be happy to support and to give my contribution to whoever comes knocking at my door. You'll be in a better situation if you find someone else. I said that once and I never had to say it again. I don't know, I think they just, the news carried, don't ask Kathy Bosch. And they probably got more response when somebody else did it than when I did it. So learn to say no. Sometimes part of stress is just to learn when to do it. We put it off so long. We procrastinate. In one time management program that I went to, word of wisdom was, don't handle anything twice. When the bill comes in, pay it right away. Don't open it up, stuff it back in, set it aside, then you're looking for it, and then you open it up and you stuff it back in, set it aside. Because, you know, even if you're not going to send it for a couple of days, what I end up doing is writing the check, and then where I should put the stamp, I'll put the date that I want to mail it. And then when I stamp it, when I see the dates, I stamp it and mail it off on that date. So that I know where that bill is and how much money we still got left after paying it and when it's going to be due. And that can reduce a good amount of stress to just do it. Otherwise, I can be one of the world's best procrastinators. I could do a good job of teaching how to procrastinate. I've been a practitioner of it long enough. So to get out of that and to reduce some of the stress from that is to just do it. Okay. Other ideas that have worked for you. What are some of these stress reducers that you can think of that have worked for you?
I've got one that's almost opposite.
Okay.
But it did work for me. Mm-hmm. And if we made it a 4D, it would be delay.
Okay. And there may be some things that's appropriate for.
And the real word is prioritize. And what I would do when I had too much, I would take my walk, and during the course of that walk, I say, now, what do I really have to do today? What is the deadline? What's the priority? How can I reorganize and restructure this? And I could find that usually there's 2 or 3 things, but the world would not come to an end if I didn't make it that day, and I could easily do it the next day because the next day wasn't full yet. And so I shuffled what I thought I had to cram into one day into, you know, this is really realistically what I have to do. So I didn't, and it worked very, very well.
But you're still doing the do it. It's just
I wasn't leaving the do it. Yeah. I was just changing what I really needed to do, and therefore it was relieving the stress because I wasn't putting off the stuff that was really urgent.
Yeah. And prioritizing is a very important quality put in, and I like the 4Ds. I was asked to do a 1-hour session on stress for the holidays for the professional women at Manufacturers Life Insurance. We have a number of head office life insurance societies in Waterloo, Ontario. So I read a couple of things, and I learned a lot, and that Christmas was a lot less stressful for me, too. And a couple of things that I decided not to do, I don't have to do all the cookies. If we don't have a lot of cookies, that's fine. We don't have a lot of calories then. But also part of my ethnic background is that we always had a poppy seed roll or a nut roll as part of our holiday goodies. And I always made these, and it's raising dough and all this kind of stuff and grinding, finding the poppy seed and mixing it up. And one of the best things I ever did was to delete it and go to farmer's market and buy it from this German woman who made it 10 times better than I ever did. And so now that's where we still have poppy seed. And we love it. It just comes from somebody else's hands who did it in her own prioritized time. So how to make those decisions of what is absolutely necessary in these stress times. Now, there are sometimes these long lists that you can go through and check off. Have these things happened in the last 6 months or the last 2 years or so? And it's a very old list. In fact, one of the high stress points at a higher level was a mortgage over $10,000. Well, if anyone had a mortgage of $10,000, it would be pretty stress-free. That's pretty low. So then they raised it to $50,000, and then they raised it to $100,000. Change again. Stress is your physical response to any change. How do we look at change? So we don't use that as a kind of scale, but to recognize all the kinds of things that come into your life and how many of them can you handle? Can you leave a job, take a new job, buy a house, sell a house, send a kid off to college, quit a job, not find a job, you know, if it takes several, you know, all these, anniversaries or holidays or weddings or birth of a child, all these that create a kind of stress level. And they say once you get into a certain point schedule of this, that, you know, 50, you're at one level, medium level, you're 50% likely to have a major illness in the next 2 years. If it gets higher, you're 75% likely. If it gets higher, you're 90% likely. Well, when we moved from Amherst, Massachusetts to Waterloo, Ontario, we bought a house. We were living in a parsonage, so we didn't sell a house. Well, we did. We sold a house. We bought a house. We changed jobs. Our second daughter went off to university. There were a couple of other things that sort of happened. And within a year, Paul was in the hospital twice in that first year because of all these different kinds of stresses that came into our life before we began to realize there's some ways of coping with them and dealing with them.
You're controlling your environment. You know, clutter happens all the time, but it's even more... it's worse when you're under stress.
Sure.
And to take that time to clear off your desk or whatever, you know, it makes a difference in how you feel. And also play music. And I found that when I was really depressed this summer, that smell made a big difference, how I felt. And so, you know, using perfume or, you know, I don't know, putting fresh flowers out or something makes a big difference.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who talk about aromatherapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't quite understand it, but you know, that's a kind of pleasant, relaxing to see flowers, or even to have the scent of a cologne or potpourri or incense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's soothing or more relaxing, or you think of it in a kind of special sense, and so
it's a way to take care of yourself, and that's what you need to do.
Okay.
To me, a bubble bath is a great thing.
A bubble bath.
Pardon?
A bubble bath.
Oh, yes.
Treat yourself.
We might talk about a sauna if you're near where that's a possibility.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on effective? The hardest thing for me if I want to do is to say no. Can you have some tips on how to get
Part of that is some assertiveness, learning some assertiveness skills. Instead of responding by saying, oh, I can't do that, or I just couldn't possibly. People seem to keep pressing you. And if you can say it with a more assertive skill, saying, I choose not to do it.
Well, I've decided not to do it. How do I get to that place inside where I get realistic enough with myself to say, I really can't think out anymore, and this is the choice I have to make?
And part of that is saying to yourself, I'm lovable and capable. I'm capable of making choices. I'm capable of knowing my limits. And that's probably one of the most difficult things to know. And maybe we need to, at times, start writing out what, you know, how much time do I have? Where do I have some time? Looking at your calendar, setting some goals and priorities, going back to prioritizing.
And not every claim upon your time or your energy can you honor. I mean, you know, you just legitimately cannot.
And often, busiest people are the ones that are asked to do more because they know that people, you get an idea that they'll get it done, somebody else won't. I was just trying to think of the author that was just on the tip of my tongue. First Things First. He's done a lot in time management. I'll think of it.
That was the title of it?
First Thing, yeah. But as whoever the author is, talks very much about the necessity to prioritize and set your goals. What are important goals? And he's not just talking about tasks to be done today. But what are goals? Is, you know, where does my family fit in? Where does my job fit in? Where does my faith, my church, my what children, whatever fit in? How do I figure out how to put first things first?
The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing.
The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. But we have to figure out what the main thing is. Sometimes that produces stress.
Right.
But once we begin to figure out where those main things are, then we can feel more comfortable about saying no. I'm choosing not to do it and feeling it's okay for me to say no. People will still love me. There's a sense of the need of unconditional love. They aren't loving me just because I do these things, but they love me anyway and recognize that some of these things I cannot do. Some others I may choose to do. This I choose not to do at this time. And how do we get that across to people? I'm choosing to. And we may have to say, I've decided not to. Or I'm choosing to or not to do such and such rather than, oh, I can't. Because they're going to try to talk you into why they think you can.
Right.
But if they're faced with you've chosen or you've decided.
I've heard to say it, I won't do this. And then they can't argue with it. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah.
I won't do it.
I had a friend who one time said she finally got to the point of saying, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, there isn't too much argument, you know, if it's an optional situation.
And that's saying, I won't. I'm not going to do this. That's a choice that you make, and that's an assertiveness that you express to whoever's asking you for the request.
That's not my gift.
Yeah.
Go and ask that gift of somebody else.
I have other gifts that I would choose to do. This is not one of them.
But back to the other question, my daughter has a very hard time asserting herself and saying no. And she had to say no to quit a job. And she said, this is what I did, Mother. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go up there. And I'm going to put my hand down my back by my spine, and I'm just going to say to myself, I have a backbone, I have a backbone,
I have a backbone. That's great. I like that.
And she actually was able to get out of that job that she thought she couldn't do because she made a commitment that she couldn't keep.
And that's important. I can recognize I have a backbone, and that's okay. I'm okay.
Christian people particularly, I think, feel guilty about saying no when some good is asked of them. But I think we, you know, Jesus didn't heal every leper in Palestine.
Sure. Okay. I think part of stress is learning to understand where we have anger and what we're angry at and finding a way to deal with that. I just did an anger thing a couple of days ago. That kind of perception of how I'm responding or how I respond to somebody else who's either done this or has not done a certain thing, and the anger that produces stress from that. That's another demand, that's another change, and how do we deal with that? Finding ways. Taking some time out, as we do, whether it's rest, or whether we exercise, or whether we find some humor. Go read the colored comics, or the comic page of today's paper to just get some laughs. Not all comics are that funny nowadays. A lot of the comics, Calvin and Hobbes, and for better or for worse, often are telling a good moral issue or dealing with a situation that has a lot of significance to us. Recognizing that my feelings are okay, and if somebody else says, oh, you shouldn't feel that way, not to take offense at it, but to know that you do feel that way, and whether somebody says it's okay or not doesn't matter. You feel what you feel, and that's okay. Feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings are. It's how we choose to respond to them that causes helpfulness or unhelpfulness. And so those are some of the choices. Well, that's one of the main things. And I think what's important, this is my handy all-purpose kind of cartoon. With the born loser, here's the boss saying, join me for a bit of one-on-one basketball at my club, and the loser says, you're on. And as the boss leaves, the boss says, see you at noon, and oh, don't forget, wear rubber-soled sneakers only. It's the rule. Well, what is he hearing?